So I'm going to call this meeting to order at 5:00. Okay, so approval of the September 10th minutes.
So moved.
Second.
Okay, there we go. So I don't see anybody for public comment. Okay. So City Park Pool Operations.
Yes.
We need to have a vote on minutes.
Oh, sorry.
We need a vote on minutes, or is it just?
Oh, shoot. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
All opposed?
I didn't catch that either. That's good.
Good job. Thanks for the catch, Virginia.
I was just going to slide.
Did you catch it too? Oh my gosh.
All right, so the next item is the start of our talk about City Park Pool Operations, and I'm going to turn this over to Brad and Kaylee in a minute. Realize this is a starting point tonight. We're going to talk about hours, we're going to talk about some rules, and we're going to talk about fees. There's a lot we don't know about this yet. We are hoping to get out on site again soon and kind of map out lifeguards and everything else that goes with this operation. So what we're going to present tonight, think of it as a starting point and kind of the base for what we will build everything else on at the program. And we really thought we'd have a room full of residents, so I'm kind of surprised because we have had a few emails this week about it. So, but with that, I will turn it over to Brad and Kaylee. Come on up.
All right, so joining me here is Kaylee Hausch, who is our aquatics program supervisor. So she's going to be getting the joy of opening this new facility next year. So we just really kind of wanted to start the discussion about hours, policies, fees. So that's really going to be the kind of the main objective with what we're talking about here today. In your packet, I had included the hours, both the hours from last year. So these were the hours that we had been keeping for many years over at City Park Pool, and wanted to provide that as context to the hours that we're also proposing for this upcoming season, to give you an idea as far as what we had been open for previously and kind of how that looks in relation to what we're proposing now. So I wanted to highlight just a few of the major changes that we have. You know, obviously with three different pools, it gives us a lot of optionality with the way that we program the space. But our intent is to be open to the public as much as we're able to be within reason of budget, staff allocations, things of that sort. So highlighting, let's start with the activity pool. That's probably the pool here that's probably the easiest because it probably has the most consistent hours. So the activity pool, if you think about our three pools, that's going to be our zero depth entry pool. Going to be the space we're probably getting a lot of the younger crowd that when they come out to our pool, this is going to be the space that they're going to be using. We are looking to have open swim time at the activity pool starting at 1 p.m. every day, so it stays consistent. We had been doing 11:00 on Saturdays and Sundays prior, but we had also been closing a little early on Saturdays for pool rentals. It's going to be 1:00 opening every day, and then we'll be closing at either 5:00 or 8:00, depending on if we have swim lessons. So let's see, so the Tuesday and Thursday we'll have swim lessons from 5 to 8, so otherwise those other days will be 1 to 8 p.m. We no longer plan to do any rentals, and we'll talk about that here shortly when we get to that section. The deep pool, which is also going to be our diving area, we plan to have that open Monday, Wednesday, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday from 1 to 8 p.m. So that's going to be very similar to the activity pool hours. Tuesday and Thursday, that will also be closing at 5:00 for swim lessons in that section. The lap pool, this is the one that's a little bit more varied with the times that we're open for lap swim, open swim, and swim lessons. So just wanted to highlight a few different areas here. So it's gonna resemble a lot of the same hours that we offered previously. We'll still have the 6:15 a.m. to 9 a.m. We will close at that point for swim lessons for almost 3 hours. and then we reopen at 11:45 and we'll be open until 2 o'clock. So there's actually a little bit more time here for the public for dedicated lap swim time. There's an additional 45 minutes each day, essentially during the week for that lap swim time. And then we'll transition to open swim at 2 o'clock. But what that means is that we'll have two lanes of those six lanes that will still be dedicated for 50 meter lap swim. So those will remain open exclusively just for the lap swim option, which ends up adding actually quite a few hours onto the schedule each week for the amount of 50 meter lap lane opportunities that are there. So when it's all, when you can kind of combine all those hours together, there are nearly 46 hours each week additional where there's at least two 50 meter lap lanes available to the public. So there's actually quite a substantial increase of the 50 meter access that the public will have with this. So that's kind of the hours in a nutshell there. Again, these are proposed hours. There are some times you'll notice that we are closed and we don't have any times noted on here. We are planning on keeping some time options available to us for programming. We're also currently in the midst of right now for our FY27 budget planning. And so what we're going to be able to do kind of depends on what we're allocated for resources and how we depend on how we allocate our staff as well, based on what Julie mentioned earlier about kind of the different zones of coverage for our lifeguards and determining how much staff that we're going to need. We feel pretty comfortable with the hours that we have proposed that we will be able to fund these hours because they are very similar to the hours that we had previously. Hours beyond that, that's going to be something that we're just going to have to determine as we go. This first season will definitely be kind of a learn as we go type of situation where we'll learn what works well and what doesn't, and we'll have to kind of adjust accordingly. And one thing that I also wanted to note with this is that there will most likely be preseason and postseason hours. So what we mean by that is when the school district is out for the summer, that's like our regular season hours, because kids have availability to go to the pool in the afternoons, but what our postseason and preseason hours typically consist of is reduced time for open swim during the week. We usually keep regular hours on the weekends, but then we also have more lap swim times during the week still, because we know there's a lot of folks that like to take advantage of that, to have their lunch hour free or whatever the case might be. Sure, yep. Yep, so one of the questions that we had this week was keeping the activity pool open for water walking in the morning times. We're gonna have some swim lessons in there anyways, but the idea is that during the lap swim times, that space would still be available for water walking as well. The pool is designed so that it's shallow enough so people can walk in there and they can turn around if they're lap swimming, if it's, you know, the 50 meters too far, but also works well for those that are doing the water walking where they can not have the water essentially go above their head for the whole duration of those 50 meters. And so the thought is that that would still be something that would be included with those lap swim times, is if people want to do water walking, they would have the option for that in the lap swim pool. Yep. Okay. Yep.
I had a question about, yep. So the activity pool, it looks like there's a gap in the middle of the day where it's closed. Why? But yet the other, I think the lap pool is still open. So I'm just wondering why.
Which day are you
so
referencing?
So I'm looking at, let's see. So during the week, it looks like you have swim lessons in the activity pool until 11:45, mm-hmm. and then it is not open again for open swim until 1. During the weekdays, if I'm reading this correctly.
Correct.
So I just wondered, it looks like the pool overall, like the facility will be open. So is there a reason that's?
There is. Because of the amount of lifeguard staff that we would have to even cover those, that additional hour and a quarter. And we had not been open to the public during the week until 1 o'clock. So that would be similar to what we had previously. Yeah, because it would just require some additional resources. It's not to say that that couldn't be a possibility down the road if we determine that there is enough demand, we have the funding to be able to do that. That could be a possibility where we do more of a noon opening, but the idea is that we keep that 1 o'clock consistent across the board so that we can say we're open to the public at 1 o'clock. Then there you have that 1 hour gap where the activity pool is open for that first hour during the week, and then the four lanes in the lap lane would then be open at 2 o'clock.
Thanks.
Going on the, yeah, that 1 hour gap you mentioned, do you see that being like a potential headache for the lifeguards of like 1 hour of them to one pool?
No, no, because it's still consistent with how you operated before.
Yeah, I don't think it would be a hard task for them. It's pretty obvious whenever families are kind of coming in, probably going to be a little bit younger kids coming in for that lap swim time, whereas like we can kind of distinctly tell who's going to come in and do lap swim and who's kind of there for like the fun activities side of it. So I think it may just take a little bit getting used to of like knowing that hour staggering, and that's just a growing pain that we will just handle and take care of. Lifeguards will be trained to like try to reference people to different hours, or we can have them posted in additional spaces. Just saying that we have, you know, 1 hour a staggered opening. This activity pool is open for everybody while we still kind of wrap up that lap swim time, and then gradually have that staggered opening for the lap swim pool as well. So it kind of gives the younger kids like a space for their own, and then we gradually get to invite more people into the pool just as the day goes by, as people get off work, hit breaks, and things like that. So I think it will just be just finalizing it and just tweaking it as we go, just to perfection it, you know. So. Okay.
Any other questions on the hours before we move forward? Okay. All right, so the next section is the rules. So one of the things, and further on in your packet, we included the current rules packet that we have. We do have this translated into Arabic, Mandarin, French, and Spanish. So that is something that we try to have one set of rules that's consistent across the board for all of our pools that we operate. The reason for that being is that, one, it helps from the patrons know that whatever pool that they visit, we're going to have the same set of rules, same set of expectations for their behavior when they're there. It also helps our lifeguard staff. Most of our lifeguard staff work all three different pools. They kind of shift around between the different locations, and so them having to just remember one set of rules rather than a few different sets. And for the most part, you know, when you're at a pool, your behavior is going to have the same expectations anyway. So just to be consistent, we just have that one set of rules. But I did want to identify a few different things that we're going to be changing for the rules this next year. Couple of them is just an addition. So we're going to have some different amenities with this pool, including the play structure and the rock wall rules. Now, we know that there might be some specifications that the manufacturer has, and we don't have that information at this point, so that could certainly change between now and then, but these are kind of the general rules of what we're thinking we would be adding to that pool rule set. Also, the unattended children, it had been seventh grade and up were permitted to be without an adult there prior. With the Southeast Junior High now having sixth graders, we've changed our policy for facility passes at our rec centers to allow those sixth graders to be able to come in. So we're wanting to make that change also for the pool rules as well. It just makes sense for us to do that. So that's going to be another adjustment that we're going to be making in those rules for this year. Do you have any questions about those changes? Okay. Pool rental considerations. So one of the things that we got asked about quite a bit, we would have time on Saturday evenings for pool rentals. We would close the pool at 5 o'clock. We would have pool rentals come in, and somewhat to the disdain of the public, sometimes when they'd come out on Saturday and find that our pool was closed to the public, they weren't always the most pleased about that. That is going to be a change that we're going to be making for City Park Pool for this upcoming year, where we're not going to be offering pool rentals. Instead, we're going to keep that time open to the public. So that does add a few more hours back in for public access. The only rentals that we plan to do, and this is consistent with what we've been doing prior to this, is we do rent those lanes out to organize swim groups. So basically any group that's there with a purpose other than leisure, or just, you know, having fun. They're there for a specific purpose where those lanes are benefiting them. So we have iFly, the school district, the Iowa City Eels, are just a few examples of the different groups that have rented from us in the past. And we want to still be able to provide that access to them when they need it. It's not something that they use all the time, but it is something that they occasionally are needing access for those lanes. So we're putting in the policy here, given that there's six lanes, it would only occur during those dedicated lap swim hours. So it would never occur when we're open to the public, where like the four lanes would be used for the public, and then we have the two lanes for public lap swim. We would not do rentals during that time. It would just be when the six lanes are available to the public. We would do those lane rentals, and we would only rent to one group at a time, and they would only have two lanes maximum, which is somewhat consistent with what we've done in past years. And then the deep pool may be rented only in the morning hours if we don't have programming in there at that time, like a water fitness class. And they would only be able to do that while lap swim is occurring simultaneously, because the thought is we would add that extra guard in to the rotation. It wouldn't be a time when we would not have the lap swim going on, because we would have to have two guards essentially for that deep end pool. So those would be the normal circumstances in which we do the pool rental. And then, of course, Julie, the director of Parks and Recreation, would maybe be able to provide some exceptions to that under certain circumstances when warranted. Any questions on pool rentals? Yeah.
Historically, how popular were pool rentals with the old city park pool? Was it awful? Sorry.
Are you talking about the Saturday night rentals?
Or just pool rentals in general? How popular was that? Was it used a lot by the community, or just rare? Mm-hmm.
We would reserve about half of the ones that we offered. So, and even sometimes it actually did happen where people would sign up online and then did not show up. So then I had staff being like, what are we supposed to do? So it wasn't always super economically efficient with our lifeguarding staff. And since we've kind of looked at our indoor pools with that same situation of like, we're not reserving all of the pool time, but we're having staff scheduled. And it's worked really beneficial in a beneficial way for us to just have people rent like the rooms, and then they come in and swim during the times that we're open. It just makes a lot more sense with the lifeguard staff and just pay. And they're still able to enjoy those pool hours and come while we're open, instead of having to like worry about all the logistics in between. So I kind of looking at that for City Park Pool as well, I think this would be really beneficial for us to kind of keep that same setup that we have, so it stays consistent with all of our facilities. And it still gives people a chance to potentially look at that multi-purpose room whenever we get to that point. And they still have like their own private area to hang out, but then still get to go and enjoy the pool. So it's about half is really what we used to reserve.
Because I assume the intent of the pool rentals in the past was for like a party.
Yes.
Yes.
So that room will just, there will just be a room they use now instead of just taking out the whole pool.
Yeah.
That's not a room, and they can just go back and forth basically.
Correct. Yeah. So that would be just during the open hours. Mm-hmm. And that will be something we'll most likely bring to you at a later time, policies regarding the rental of the community room, because there's a lot of things that are kind of up in the air with what we would need to know about that before we can make policies for that room, and how often we'd be renting it out and under what circumstances. So we'll be coming back at a later time, but if they do rent that and we have it available for rental, the community room, they would not have exclusive access to the pool.
Yep.
Oh, Dr. yeah. Columbus, if you want to make a motion and a second and approve this as the base policies and hours, you can do that. If you don't feel comfortable doing it yet, we can wait till we have more information, but this is kind of the basis. We'll come back with more and more details as it develops throughout. So.
Yeah.
Will you still do, I might be looking ahead a little bit on the full admission rate, but will you still do the reduced rate for evening swim?
To be determined. Yeah. We're We're not going to make any decisions on that yet, but we've discussed that as being an option. But like when and how much and all that, yeah, that will be to be determined. Yep. So a couple other things that I wanted to touch on here, camps and organized groups. So another sore point for the public at times was the Thursday afternoons. We were closed to the public except for organized camps that had pre-registered with us. The idea behind that was that the camps would all have this day where they would come in and they would not have access to come in any other day during the week. And the thought was is that would increase people's enjoyment the rest of the week with all the camps not running around. We're going to be changing that for the new city park pool policy or hours. So we're going to be open as usual on Thursday afternoons to the public. The difference would be basically any day during the week, we'll still take those pre-registrations for camps and organized groups. And we'll probably have like a set percentage of capacity that's determined where we'll take groups up to that point so that it's not going to be overwhelming any given day with the number of camps that are there at the pool, but it kind of helps spread it around a little bit more with other days. And then fees, I wanted to touch on that real quick here. So pool admissions, we had not adjusted our daily admission rate. It had been $4 since the early 2010s. I looked back through the activity guides to figure out when that was. So it was early 2010s, the last time that was adjusted. In the meantime, we've made incremental adjustments. You're all involved with the fees, fee increases every 2 years, which we have increased the pool admissions incrementally during that time, but we have not touched that pool admission. And the reason for that being is that it's a 25% increase to go from that $4 to $5. Typically, we don't make that big of a jump with any of the fees that we have, but we also don't like dealing with nickels, quarters, and dimes and stuff. So from an operational perspective, it just makes sense to do that whole dollar at one time. So that's what we're proposing for the fee adjustment for this. And then if you look at how that compares to other local options here, $5 is still very fair and very competitive in contrast to a lot of the other options. It would still be kind of the low end of what other people are charging around here.
Yep. A couple questions.
Yep.
How big, how much are the fees a portion of the budget for the pool?
That's a good question.
Not quite 50%, if I remember.
Yeah.
That's just off the top of my head. We can get you that information.
Yeah. I was just curious if it was just kind of a drop in the bucket, or it sounds like it is a fairly large portion of the.
Yeah, the pools are definitely not a money making business.
Right.
But as far as percentage-wise, I can't recall off the top of my head either.
And your fees and charges is actually the next item on the agenda. So
oh,
I just want
yep.
to make sure if you're going to take action, you take action on the first
item.
Okay.
Okay, I had one other question about fees.
Yep.
Should I save it or ask it now?
If it's fees and charges, wait until the next item. If it's just the general pool things, go ahead.
Okay, general pool. I mean, are we ready to make a motion?
So if we make a motion that this is like the framework,
mm-hmm.
if you guys start running the season, or you get closer to the season and you're like, hey, I think we want to adjust this, that's something that would come back to us and then we can make that change app. We could review that after.
Right, if there's something that's operationally not working for us.
Okay.
Yeah.
I have one question. In one of the pool rules 15, when we have 15 or less pool users for 60 minutes or more, during open swim, we reserve the right to close. Mm-hmm. Is that old or new? Has it been around?
That's been around even since I was a lifeguard. It doesn't happen very often, mostly towards the end of the summer. It gets cooler a little bit earlier. People start getting children used to school routines. We start to see a lot of drop in the attendance, but not very often are we making the calls to close early. We really obviously try to avoid that, but it has happened in the past, yeah, that we just have very, very low attendance. Weather is a thing, issue, and people just too chilly. So yes, that it's been around, but it's not heavily utilized.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Okay, anyone have a motion to accept the operations as stated?
So moved.
Okay, Alex.
Second.
Second. All in favor?
Aye.
All opposed? Okay, so carried. Then we can talk about fees and charges.
Yes. Now. Yep. So kind of moving into the fees and charges. So typically we hold off, and we do this every other year, where we actually propose any fees, adjustments to the fees. And for the most part, that's going to be the case this year. We did do a fee increase pretty much across the board for FY26. The only adjustments here are what we'd like to do is do a deposit for the farmers market. So one of the issues that we've been having is that I don't know if you go out to the farmers market and you see some empty stalls that are out there. That is not for lack of interest. That is vendors not showing up. That is vendors withdrawing late, and or doing a no call, no show on us, so that we don't have time to reach out to some of our other interested vendors to fill that spot. Then the problem with that also is not one. It's from an aesthetic perspective, it's not great to see all those empty stalls there. Makes it look like the market is, you know, doesn't have as much interest in it, that it does from vendors to attend that. Second of all, it takes away an opportunity from another vendor to be able to vend that would have been interested in vending. Thirdly, we don't get the revenue for that. The way that we tend to do this with our vendors is that we go around with their invoice the day of the market, and we collect the $25 for them to have to pay in advance. There's sometimes a lot of it's kind of a big puzzle each week. For the most part, it's set with the vendors, but there is some adjustments that have to be made. And so from a staffing perspective, from a vendor perspective, it's just easiest to collect that $25 on the day of the market. But they don't show, then we can't collect that. And so the thought is that we're going to implement a $100 refundable deposit. So each instance in which they do a no call, no show, we take $25 from that refundable deposit. We get our revenue, and they have a little bit more skin in the game, so to speak, that hopefully they're abiding by the policy where they give us advance notice by Wednesday end of the day to let us know that they're not going to be able to vend. That's the courtesy that we ask. If they have $25 on the line, they might be more apt to do that. And then at the end of the season, whatever the remaining balance is, we'll refund that back to them. And I think from an administrative perspective, I know our farmers market program supervisor spends a lot of time on the phone dealing with folks that aren't showing up, letting them know, hey, you either have to like call in early on Wednesday, get this taken care of. So from an administrative perspective, it would save us a lot of time. And we have had over 100 no call, no shows or late withdrawals this season alone. So we're talking a couple thousand dollars at least in lost revenue there.
Do you have like a kind of a penalty system? Like if they don't, if someone doesn't do it, say three times, that they or at the back of the list, or
we do. We have where they would have to call in by Wednesday, and they have to pay, or otherwise they're taken off the map for that week. The problem is that our program supervisor has to be available to take that call. So sometimes they're crossing paths. They're not around when the person calls in to make the payment. There's just a lot of things that have to happen there. Where from an administrative perspective, it'd just be easier just to take the $25. And then once they have the four instances, then they're taken off the schedule for the rest of the season. And then the aquatics, what we had talked about, it's been a while since we've changed that rate, so we'd be looking to change that from $4 to $5. And then also our 10 punch pass from 32 to 40, which basically is you buy 8, get 2 free.
I went and grabbed the book for you, Brian. In 2024, City Park Pool brought in about $100,000 in revenue, and the expenses were about $241,000. So it wasn't quite 50%. Now, what that doesn't account for is our season passes are all sitting in either Mercer or Robert A. Lee. So It's a little higher than that for the revenue for City Park Pool. But yeah, they're at best 50% revenue.
The other question I was going to ask is, do you know if the fee like restricts some people from attending? Like, do you have any way of knowing if some people don't come because of the cost?
We don't necessarily know for the people that don't attend. We know that that's been something that's been addressed in our master plan, was that financial barriers for just participation in our programs in general. So we try to alleviate that as much as we can. We do have a rec assist program, which if you take 50% off of, for those that are income eligible, take 50% off the passes. Our passes are very affordable, and it cuts that cost by 50%. And so it'd basically be the cost of a few admissions a month, essentially. And so if you have a family, I mean, it's pretty easy to make that up pretty quickly. So I don't see, over the 15 years with not making that adjustment, I don't see that dollar being really all that prohibitive to people any more so than the $4 might have been. So.
So you mentioned if they miss the four, take the, you know, and the refundable deposit's gone, then they're off for the rest of the season. Is that off for the rest of the season stated somewhere else explicitly in the market rules?
It's not at this point, no, but that would be in the vendor handbook, though. This gives us the right to be able to charge the $100 to begin with.
Okay.
So that's something where we could look at possibly, like, do they have to re-up the $100 to keep that on? But the issue is, if somebody's missing four times and not giving us the courtesy of saying, hey, I'm not going to be able to make it, or they're doing a no-show, there's other vendors that are wanting to vend there.
Oh, absolutely.
That, you know, so it's one of those things where after four, we're probably ready to move them on anyways.
Yeah, just making sure that's, like, kind of,
yeah, it would be in the vendor handbook. Okay. the specific details laid out for that.
Perfect.
It's not here just because this is more the fee to charge that initial fee.
Gotcha.
Rather than the stipulations of what happens afterwards.
Are we ready for a motion to increase City Park pool fee to $5 and the new farmer's market $100 deposit thing?
So moved.
I think you would approve the entire fee schedule.
Just approve the entire fee schedule.
So moved. Second.
Okay. All in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All opposed? All right. Thanks.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Thanks, Brad.
Okay, next we're going to have Julie give us a little report.
I told Brad I'd be quiet in the back. I just can't.
No, it was all good. It was important.
And actually, I don't have that much of a report for me this month. I'm going to let Tyler and Brad do their reports. They probably have more to share. So maybe Tyler goes
first.
All
right, Tyler, what you got?
I guess first up, not on my list, but if you've been out to the parks where we all went on the tour to see the projects from this year, they're mostly complete. We are waiting on some extra safety surfacing, the mulch, essentially, at some of the parks, and we've been communicating with the contractor on that. So hopefully soon on that, we're pushing them as much as we can to get those finished up. So if you haven't had a chance to go out and revisit some of those spots you saw earlier this year, I think they turned out really nice. Some good quality projects, some thankful neighbors around the areas. So I think it'll they'll be nice projects for a long time. Trees, we've been planting a lot of trees. The crew probably has, there's less than 100 left to plant. I'm gonna guess somewhere around 50 to 60 left to plant. Street trees right now are going in up off of Green Mountain Drive by Pheasant Hill Park. We also planted 30 trees yesterday with support of Big Grove. They funded the planting in conjunction with some help from Trees Forever and the Rotary Clubs. A few Rotary members were there, so that was a good other project there. So same neighborhood as the street tree plantings. We'll have some efficiencies in watering and things like that there. So that was a good time getting them out there, helping plant. Big Grove's helped us out with multiple projects over the years. So they're always good volunteers for us. Let's see, Court Hill Shelter is there now. So we got the small one by the basketball hoops there put in. I think that'll be a nice spot to catch some shade if you're playing basketball or just passing by on the trail there. Our crew put that up. They had never put one of that style together before, but it seemed to go pretty smooth. So I think they actually had a good time putting that up. They also reinstalled the playground that used to be by City Park Pool. So with the pool changing, we didn't want to eliminate that playground completely. It was fairly new. I'm going to say somewhere around 2017 we put that in. So we pulled it out and we moved it down to Lower City Park. West of the baseball fields. So I've already heard some praise because kids are able to play while their siblings are playing baseball or softball down there. Been real busy with athletic fields. Sometimes you don't think about that for fall, but still have fall softball, fall baseball. So similar to springtime for those, they're busy. But we also do flag football. So if you drive by the softball complex three or four nights a week, there are tons of cars, tons of people, lots of kids playing there. It's a good use of our outfield space on those softball fields this time of year. We had previously, up until last year, did part of the season at Scott Park. Parking wasn't adequate, so we've shifted all of it down here, and it's worked really well for us. And this year we have quite a few cross-country meets as well. So another cool use of a facility at soccer that wouldn't get as much use during the week at this time of the year. It's always busy on the weekends with soccer, but it's been a really good success for us. I think that started about 8 years ago, maybe 9 years ago with that course. And halfway through the season, we added a couple more meets because places requested it as a space. I think we even had the number one recruit in the country around there a couple of times. So kind of a cool space. And then I think my last thing, one of the crews has been working on the bridges in Hickory Hill Park. So we've added some already. We're adding a brand new one. It's funded as part of our REAP grant project there. Between the two big hillside prairies, if you're familiar, kind of back up in further towards the north in the park. So the bridge that was there previously, it was about as wide as these tables here. And this one will be wide enough, you know, if we had an emergency out there, fire could get their side by side across it. We can get a side by side across it for maintenance as well. Nothing like a big truck going to be able to go across it, but a lot more accessibility to those sections of the park. And as far as the trail goes, it'll be shifting a little bit. I'd say it's probably about 50 yards to the north. So we'll get around a spot that had a lot of roots and problems with erosion around the trees there too. So I think all in all, it'll be a really good addition to that part of the park. Any questions for me?
All right, thank you so much, Tyler.
Awesome. Yeah, and before he sits down, I would mention that Tyler was chosen and gave a presentation earlier in September at our National Recreation and Park Association National Meeting, a little presentation planting the forest through the tree. No.
I can't remember.
It was about forestry.
Building the
forest through the trees. Yeah, it was very well attended and a lot of good comments from all around the country, actually, about it. So kudos.
Well, congratulations, Tyler. That sounds awesome. Okay, Brad, do you have anything you'd like to add?
Yeah, I've got just a few updates here. So a couple weeks ago on a Sunday out at Lower City Park, we had our Get Outside Rec Festival. This is our third year of doing that. It was fantastic weather. We had low 80s. Which is unbelievable for late September to have that kind of weather. This is our third year of doing that. We've lucked out so far on the weather. So end of September, you know, it can always be a little dicey around that time, but we had a great turnout for it. Even got a little warmer in the afternoon, and our attendance dwindled a little bit. But we had probably about a dozen different partner groups that we worked with. It's an opportunity for people to come out, explore a lot of different outdoor recreational opportunities that they can participate in. So our partner groups come out, and they offer a different activity that people can join up or start. You know, sometimes it's nice for them to be able to try the equipment, see if they like it, and maybe flourish as a hobby from there. So another great event for us. This Sunday, October 12th, from 2 to 5:30 at the Terry Trueblood Recreational Area, we have our Indigenous Peoples Day celebration. So that is going to be, we work with Great Plains Action Network out of Sioux City for this event, and they help us with some of the financing for it, for music, dancing, spoken word, and poetry. So we'll have a stage with different things going on. We'll have some different crafts and activities. So a fun event. So if you're looking for something, it is a free event. You're welcome to join us on Sunday for that. And then we have a lot of different Halloween events because it's October. We already had one to kick off the season. This was at the Ashton House. It was our Sensory Scare Fair. So this is an event that Mallory has started out there. It's our second year of doing that, where it's more sensory-friendly games and activities with the Halloween theme. And we probably had about 100, 150 people come out for that. So a great, great turnout there. And then coming up here, we've got a teen mystery night. So we're really doing things for all ages here. We got the teen mystery night, where it's kind of like a dinner theater thing. We've got a floating pumpkin patch for kids at the pool here. We've got our Halloween carnival here in a couple weeks on a Friday. It packs this place for a couple hours. It's always fun to see the kids in their costumes. We usually get about 1,000, 1,200 people that come through the doors in those 2 hours, so we definitely pack them in here. Our Halloween market, so we'll have some Halloween-themed things going on at the Halloween or at the farmer's market on October 25th. And then our top Monster Mash, actually on Friday, October 31st, where the kids come out to Mercer for our tot time, dressed in their costumes, and we have a lot of different games and activities for them there. So a lot of fun things coming up.
Very fun.
Yes. Wow. Yeah, October is a great thing for Parks and Recreation professionals. It's we have a lot of fun with it.
I can tell by your
We have an overabundance of a ghastly amount of Halloween activities. Any questions?
Is there an itinerary for the Indigenous People Day? Because like, if I want to come see some dancing, or like, how do I know what time to come?
I will send you the schedule.
Okay.
Mallory has a tentative schedule of all the different activities that are happening and at what time. So
I'll
get that over to you.
All right. Thanks, Brad.
Yeah.
All right. Anything else? Okay. Thank you very much. All right. So,
Yeah, I would just thank everyone that's sitting here. I know you all have done your training, your open meetings training. Yes, it was exciting, it was fun, and I appreciate the couple hours you took to do it. Thank you very much.
Our pleasure. Okay, so commission time. Anything, Jeff, you'd like to?
Yes, actually. I had heard from this morning that there were some women who felt unsafe in the women's locker room recently.
Here?
There was some, yeah. I actually was in the locker room this morning talking with them. We have some meetings set up later this week. We've been in contact with the police today. So we're taking it pretty seriously, and I think it's all going to work out. But we're well aware and working on it.
Great, thank you.
Yeah.
Okay. Thanks, Seth. Thanks. Alex, do you have anything?
I'll say thanks to Brad and the Parks and Rec team for hosting the open meeting training at Terry Trueblood. It's very fun. The food is really good. I'm really excited for the Halloween carnival. I know.
Oh, yeah, you have little ones, huh? Oh,
yeah, we've been going every year.
Yeah, I remember those days. Sure, fun.
That's it for me.
Thanks. Michael, do you have anything?
Nothing for me.
Okay. Brian?
So I got to watch the shelter in Court Hill Park go up, so that was kind of fun to watch them working on that over a week and a half or so. And it looks great. Already seen some people using it. And then it's really cool to see all the different events going on. I know I didn't go this year, but that Get Outside event I've been to in the past, and it's just really cool to see our park used in that way to kind of encourage people to explore other ways to get outside. So yeah, thanks for all the work getting the fun activities.
Yeah, feeling just like a bunch of appreciation tonight, especially thinking about Hickory Hill. Like, you're talking about the bridge, and I mean, I just love that place so much. We're so lucky to have, it's so pretty right now, especially. So anyway, I don't have anything else, but thank you.
Excellent.
So, oh, Jeff, yes.
One more thing. I wanted to recognize Spencer, our tech guy here, for changing locks in the men's room from the unused lockers over to the half-size and full-size lockers, which have only had, about a quarter of them have had locks for a while. I asked him about that. 2 days later, he had taken all the other little ones off and put on the big one. It makes a big difference. I hear guys in there all the time saying, ah, we have lockers back. This is so cool. So I wanted to thank Spencer.
We received your email about, thank you very much. We passed it on to Spencer and the rest of the government building staff that made that happen. So yeah, it's
awesome.
Good.
Very good, thank you. Thanks, Spencer and the crew. All right, so we want a motion to adjourn. Jeff first, and then
second.
A second, Brian. Okay, all in favor?
Aye.
All opposed. All right, meeting adjourned.